Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neat the cover of October skies.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Bubba's tired, but we're going to have some fun, and we've got a great show planned for you as always, and always interesting perspectives from many of our different guests, but I think there's no perspective like the jokeable, ridiculous perspective of the Federal Reserve. You know, I hate to be the basher all the time of the Fed, but you know, you gotta beat on what is beatable. And I don't know what you think. And you know, obviously, I love when you guys share opinions with me and you share thoughts with me. But I got to tell you, in my eyes, I don't know that anybody's done worse of a job at taking care of the economy. And those people say, well, it's not their fault. You can never blame one group or one person for what's going on. But you certainly, they are a big part of it, and they are a very powerful part of it. And they could have done things a lot differently. But instead, they decided that the best thing they could do was paint themselves into a corner like a bunch of imbos and not have themselves set up to succeed. You know, in your life, you always learn to put yourself in the best opportunity for success, not for failure. And I believe, you know, and I may be alone here, but I'd love to hear from you, that the Fed has only set themselves up for failure. And I find that sad, because when you think about it, I mean, let's look at the collective IQ of the people that are working in the Fed. Okay, pretty smart people, right? I mean, just on a general intelligence base, I guess if they took the NFL draft test, what the hell they call that? The Rorschach? No, those are tests. I forget whatever the test that the NFL players take. They all do probably pretty good, right? If you put them in a classroom, they probably do pretty well. But you know, it's amazing, and this is one thing that always bothers me about the demand for college. And I'm not saying you shouldn't go to college, because I think obviously it has its points and its place and its in things you should learn. However, translating a business degree from college to the real world, I don't think is always the greatest thing. I mean, if I were, running a college as a business, which I think that's a business. I think everything we do is a business. Anything that creates a fee or money is a business. And I would think that we would need to get our kids and people some more practical experience about how to live your life. And maybe, you know, set something up, a program where they actually build a business and have people actually run the business to learn how it works. Do you ever think about that? You know, do you realize how many people out there that are extremely bright but have no idea how to function in a business model? And I think that is what bothers me more than anything else. You've heard the Badger and myself many, many times. And this goes back way before even the Bubba Show existed. I used to do these YouTube videos, you know, 5 minutes a day to get out to my people talking about, you know, what we were seeing. And they're still not doing things that would work. And I don't understand why it has to be like follow the book. You know, follow the rules. You know, it's like one of those goofy desks you buy or furniture that you have to put together yourself. You know, those are a pain in the ass, right? I got a million parts and you got to piece them all together. And, you know, if you read the directions, it'll take you about 4 hours. Me, I slap it together. And so I always have a few leftover extra parts. But all the stuff manages to work and it manages to be there and it manages to hold up. And that's what I think that's what we're missing. And that's what bothers me with what we have now is a lack of working knowledge, a lack of common sense, a lack of being able to function to what's happening, not what you're thinking is supposed to happen based on the book that you read. You know, it's amazing. We know when you read, everything is in order. But when you're in business, that is not necessarily the same case, right? Now, I know a big percentage of you guys out there are entrepreneurs and self-employed business people. Now, you know that, you know, the book says this is the order supposed to happen. It doesn't always happen in that order. And I think that is the lack. That is where we have missed totally the boat on how to make this country better, this economy better. Because I believe that if they would have listened to me and the Badger way back when, not only would we not be in a recession, but we would be flourishing and we would be growing. And it doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense to me. You know, if you look around the United States, just to start, you know, do you realize how many unemployed we have here? Do you realize how many people that we could employ? Do you realize that we could probably bring a lot of the manufacturing that we ship out to all these foreign countries back into this country because of it? Do you realize that we could be doing so much better if we had somebody who had a clue? You know, I go back to the Wizard of Oz. If I only had a brain, if I only had a heart, and if I only had courage. Well, we know they have a brain, but the brain doesn't function on a business model. It functions on an academic model. And there's nothing wrong with being smart, but it'd be nice if they could tie the smartness into how to really run a business. And that is, you know, what I see is that they don't understand the model of how things work. And you can continue to try to read your way out of the situation, but it doesn't work that way. You know, it's like raising children. You know, there's 1,000 or 1,000,000 books on child raising, but if you've ever raised a child, the books don't always have the correct order nor what things are going to happen. You know, we've all had kids, you know, but if you've had kids, you know that different problems arise at different times and you don't have time to think about it. You don't get to go to another source and you don't get a do-over. And that, I think, is the bigger problem, is the Fed didn't have the right recipe to begin with, and they're not going to get a do-over. And the problem is sometimes you just have to cut your losses. You know, in trading, in gambling, in life, you know, sometimes you're in a bad business deal. You just got to cut your losses and say, hey, it's over. And my problem here is their refusal to realize that they screwed up. And I have no problem that they screwed up. That happens. I mean, if you make good decisions, and they're not always good. Sometimes you think they're good. But when the actual not making a decision, the actual sitting back and saying, well, we'll see. I don't know. It reminds me of Jackie Mason. You know, I don't know. Maybe it could be. I'm not sure. That, to me, becomes the bigger issue. It's not that they made the mistake, because in my opinion, they butchered it. They've done a horrible job. I don't care what anybody says, and I'm entitled to my opinion. But you could still rectify a bad decision. And that is what they have not done, in my opinion, is they have not rectified the horrible decisions that they've made. They continue to be jackasses and do nothing and hide. And to me, that pisses me off. But I won't be pissed off now, because we've got the brand new issue of the Bubba Report coming out to you. And it's yours if you go to thebubbashow.org, and you can buy it right there for $99 a year. You're going to get a minimum of 12 issues a year with my proprietary indexes, with writing from everybody, 150 years of trading experience. But I've got to step out for a break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break with Jane King.
In this time, give it to me easy.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd, Bubba Horowitz, and as has become a ritual, one of our favorites, Jane King, Lila Max Media, the Ka-Ching Report, and just all over the country. But I know, Jane, you're having some technical problems today. What's going on?
Well, you know, it's funny because I don't know if you read the Ka-Ching Report last week, but there's a story about a guy who took his computer out in the alley and shot it with a gun. And I could kind of, you know, relate to that this morning. Just, you know, issues, technical issues. And at 4 in the morning, that's not very much fun at all. But hey, we're back. I'm not going to let it ruin my day.
That's right. You make the day. I mean, that's the Jane King way. She makes the day. I'm becoming a poet in my old age. So Jane, you know, we got a lot of stuff going on, and really it's a whole bunch of nothing, although we talk about a lot. But, you know, the market's really gone not a lot of places. I mean, they've gone up, they've gone down. But at the end of the day, no matter what happens, we're still basically in the same place. But, you know, I know because of what you do, and, you know, you're basically coast to coast. You have the pulse on people everywhere. I mean, you're in Texas, you're in Seattle, you're in Florida, you know, just to name a few. And obviously you live in New York. What are you seeing? What are people saying to you about their personal lives and where they at and what they're seeing in the overall economy?
Well, I do still hear a lot of people concerned with gas prices. And, you know, I mean, I talk to local news stations. So these are people who aren't, you know, trading stocks, watching their, you know, investments every day. They've got kids, they've got jobs, they do something else. But gas price is still an issue, and especially in April, because we've seen oil, I think, up 20-something percent during the month of April, and it's been the best-selling commodity this month. So they're starting to feel it again, and they're starting to wonder if these predictions that we've had of lower gas prices in the summer are actually going to come to fruition. So we'll see. The largest stockpiles in history for crude oil yesterday, but still we saw oil up. And it's interesting. I was actually having lunch yesterday with a group of, like, I call them old-timers on Wall Street. I mean, most of them aren't even on the trading floor anymore. But we have lunch about, you know, once a quarter. And they're all really friendly energy companies, and not just for growth, but also for the dividends they pay. So I might take a look at those later today.
You know, so, you know, and again, I like the fact that you are talking about people that are not traders, because, you know, we seem, as you and I both in the media, and we obviously focus a lot on the markets, but it's really not about the markets. And my contention has been the whole time is that the average guy, the middle Joe guy, the, you know, guy who's not doing much and doesn't care about the market all the time, they are not as thrilled or as happy as what's going on as you might hear some of the people tell you. So what does it mean to you when somebody tells you that they're struggling, that it's not as good and things are problematic? Does that give you any worry going forward?
Well, it certainly doesn't surprise me. I mean, I think that, unless you are, you know, running a hedge fund, or, you know, CEO of a company, a major company, you know, unless you're really high up, you're struggling. And I mean, even people who are making a lot of money still, they've worked themselves into expensive lifestyles, you know, with housing, and when I'm talking from a New York perspective here, you know, private schools, you know, summer vacations, you know, all this. And, I just think, you know, it's the American way. I mean, we spend what we have, and we don't really save it. It's just kind of uncool to save money. And I find a lot of people are having some tough times right now. You know, it's interesting you asked me about, like, when I talk to all these stations around the country, and I've been more and more impressed with the Western U.S. I mean, so maybe this is a grass is always greener situation, but I see Utah at or near the top of all these business-friendly lists. There was a number one job growth from March of 2014 to March of 2015. Colorado, Denver just surpassed home prices pre-crisis. Seattle, one of the top tech companies. Of course, San Francisco is, you know, stratospheric in its home prices and economy. And it just seems like the most exciting stuff is going on in the West. New Jersey just lost two economic development people to head the New Jersey's, you know, their efforts to attract businesses to the state. lost two of them since the beginning of the year to Texas. So it just seems like the Western U.S. has really kind of got it going on right now. They're doing some pro-business stuff.
Well, of course, one of the things that a lot of these states in the West have is they have no state tax, which is always a benefit. And it seems to me that they're more corporate friendly, which, you know, I think when you look at the big picture, Jane, you know, that, you know, we have done, or our government has done a really bad job at trying to maintain businesses in this country, which is obviously why a lot of companies like Apple and those keep all their money out of the United States, and they all move out. And I think that's one of the problems that needs to be addressed, because, you know, we're really not seeing, you know, great jobs added. You know, it's amazing. And I'm going to ask you this, you know, you're a Midwestern gal, and you're also now obviously a big city gal, but, you know, when you look back and you go, you know, the United States, we used to do a lot of manufacturing here and we didn't take everything to China. And I get the price point, and I'm not saying we shouldn't. But now, in a situation where we are today, there's a lot of people that aren't working that would work, and they'd be willing to work for a lot less than they were making when they were working, you know, on the line and doing all those things when they're making those ridiculous numbers, because they did make a lot of money back in the day because of the unions and whatever. But I think we could bring a lot of people back to work and really bring a lot of the business back to the United States. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's got to be some kind of way to compromise that, because, you know, and I've seen both sides, and I'm not an anti-union person. I do get that companies will take advantage of workers when given the opportunity. You know, I think that does happen. But I've also seen union abuse. The TV industry in New York is heavily unionized. And I mean, I can tell you some anecdotal stories about, you know, taking years to fire somebody who sleeps on the job, and, you know, hearings, and, you know, and all kinds of stuff. So it seems like there has to be some kind of better solution where somebody can get paid a decent wage. I mean, Boeing, for example, they've got the operation in Washington, which is unionized, and they've got the operation in South Carolina, which is not. And they're considering unionizing in South Carolina, but they don't have enough support to bring it to a vote. So, you know, I think that's a good situation to look at and go, well, what are they paying the South Carolina people versus the Washington people? How does that affect their balance sheet? How are the workers? Are they able to live a middle-class lifestyle? And kind of come up with a solution, because, I do think union membership, by the way, just this week hit an all-time low, 11% in the U.S., and most of those are, like, you know, teachers and public workers.
And I'm in agreement with you. You know, unions were great when they were brought out back in, you know, the 30s, and I thought it was a great thing. Of course, they've become a business all to themselves. Mm-hmm. I think we did get a little bit carried away, and I do agree with you that we need to get something that is fair for everybody, and it shouldn't be like an assigned minimum wage, and you shouldn't have to have all these regulations of how to get rid of somebody, you know, because, look, you know, we're in a society that we've become much too regulation based, and I'm not saying that there's not some unfair practices, but there has to be some more of a middle ground, don't you think?
Oh, I do. I mean, I definitely think so. And I think a lot of it, when it comes to education, and not just like elementary and college, but also when you are in the workforce, improving your skills about every 2 years, you know, learning a new software program or taking some kind of course on, I don't know, management or technology or whatever it is, business. I mean, things that can just help you in general, not necessarily in the current job you have, but just staying current on the workforce and learning about things instead of just getting into a job and just kind of, you know, riding it out as long as you can. And then, you know, if your company would go under or they have cutbacks, then, you know, you're kind of screwed. You don't really have any skills. You haven't been out there. You know, and I think, you know, education has to be a lifelong thing. And I think that would help people. You know, it would help the workforce. I think it would help people have some longevity to their careers.
And I agree. I mean, you know, that's why my friend Jane King always brings such a great perspective. Any new stations lined up? Or I know you keep growing, so anything more to report today?
Yeah. No, well, you know what happens? May is a television ratings month. So typically all business, new ventures, things like that come to a screeching halt about mid-April. So nothing new to add, but hopefully this summer we might be adding some. So there's some things in the works, but it takes a long time. It's a slow-moving business.
Well, you guys have to check out Jane King, because if you're in one of her viewing areas, there isn't any better than my friend Jane King from the Ka-Ching Report, Lila Max Media. Jane King, as always, you bring a great light and some very interesting things to the Bubba Show. We appreciate you.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great day.
This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break. And check out the BubbaShow.org, because we've got the new Bubba Report coming out. You can now get it right online, right at the BubbaShow.org. All you got to do is click the link. $99 a year gets you in the groove. The Bubba Show will be right back next. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report. Bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report. Bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz in has become a regular, a great contributor, and a pretty smart guy, and a friend of mine, Mike McClone, ETFSecurities.com. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, Todd.
So, Mike, we got a lot of things going on, and I think we had a lot going on and then a whole bunch of nothing. But I think the biggest thing to talk about first, and I think right up your alley, especially based on your background, you came from the floor, you're now building ETFs, you're really, you know, have your pulse on the market and have to because of what you do. We take a look at what the Fed did on Wednesday, and before you answer, we know that the bonds were pricing in an interest rate rise or some indication, and, you know, the markets have been, you know, tenuous at best, but still almost near their highs, right? We're not that far away. What did you take away from the Fed meeting, and what are your thoughts?
Well, the key headline that really came out after that Fed meeting, I think, is significant. Is one I saw was that Fed's still open to second half rate rise despite a slowing economy, and that's a bit disconcerting. I think the Fed for a lot of investors, because what do they have to look forward to? If things improve, higher rates and tightening. If things don't improve, well, I mean, that's not good. But overall, what happened yesterday, I think, was the Fed did what most people expected. They're data dependent. The data has been weak. They acknowledge that. But they said, oh, it's going to get better, which we hope it does. It'd be wonderful. So you just kind of look at what the market did. The Fed funds futures actually increased their tightening expectations a little bit for this year. But overall, every time they talk about, you know, we talk about tightening, it keeps getting put off. So a good example is this year. You look at the Fed funds futures, December, which is basically the indication for the entire year. At the beginning of this year, December Fed funds futures priced in about 50 basis points of tightening, you know, or half of 1%. Right now, since we're beginning May, you know, we're almost five months into the year, those same December Fed Fund futures pricing only 25 basis points of tightness. So it keeps being put off. A lot of that's because of weaker data. And I think the Fed is potentially stuck. As we all know, they definitely want to get off the floor. The data that will not allow them to do that right now, and they fully expect it will, and I hope it's right. And I think this dream of a rate rally means when inflation is going up and the Fed has to tighten, it's still just very much of a dream.
So, you know, you've got the Fed is in Fantasy Island as far as I'm concerned. I don't like to be critical of Fed, but I don't like the Fed. I think they're in Fantasy Island. I think they have no idea of what to do next. And I think as they continue to, so to speak, kick the can down the road, sweep the crap under the carpet, whatever analogy you want to use, I think all they're doing is building us up for more disappointment and a bigger problem, because they ain't got the stones to step up and do business the way it's supposed to be done. Now, obviously, in my opinion, they missed their opportunity or their window to raise rates a couple of years ago. And they continue to float on this monetary policy of, you know, feed the banks, feed the big guys, screw the little guy. And I think at some point, I think we're going to see some much more trouble. And I don't only mean financial trouble, but I think you might see, you know, some more anguish and grief from among the streets, among the actual people. What do you think?
Yeah, and I think that's the risk they have, and they know it. If they tighten and things get worse, like the ECB did this in 2011, they tightened in April and June, and by the time they got to December, they were easing. Look what they're doing now. They're printing as much money as they possibly can. So the risk is the Fed's trying to be ahead of the curve. And there's times to do that. I remember in the 90s when things were picking up. Yeah, it was the time to be ahead of the curve and worry about inflation. But there, to me, there's absolutely no reason to be considering to get against ahead of the curve unless they're worried more about some asset prices getting out of hand, i.e. equities and New York real estate and stuff like that. And I think that's what they're doing. So to me, the risk of tightening is so much greater than the risk of not doing anything and trying to be behind the curve. And historically, that's probably been better. And that actually shows up in the gold price. Like, people are worried that the Fed's going to tighten and the price of gold will go down. But I've done the research on this. I looked at like the last five tightening cycles since 1970 and so, and virtually during every single one of those tightening cycles, the price of gold's gone up. And I think the reason is because generally the Fed only starts tightening when there's inflation. They try to catch up, and generally they're better off to be behind the curve. Obviously in the 80s they were a little bit, Volcker caught up a little bit. But during inflation cycles, that's good for the price of gold. And generally they're easing when things are going bad, or they have to try to protect like they did. They started the easing in 2007 because we saw this big financial collapse coming. So to me, it's all down there. It's too bad we have to talk about the Fed too much, but that's what the problem is now globally. The markets are so dependent on federal, on central bank stimulus. Like, what's really happened lately is the Chinese have cut 100 basis points. Now, most people say, oh, that's great. It's helped the stock market. It's helped boost some commodity prices and things. But you really look at what happened, they might be panicking. Why are they cutting 100 basis points? We don't know all the data that's happening in China. But if you look at the commodity markets the last 12 months, it'll tell you there's really not a lot of demand coming out of China. Although the story for this month, the end of April, is really the biggest story is like crude oil is up 24%. It's the biggest rally in 6 years. But it's just catching back up. It got way too cheap. We talked about that. It's about $60 a barrel now, and it's finally bounced up a little bit. So, well, I think things are reverting on this. The biggest risk is for the Fed that they try to be ahead of a curve when they shouldn't be ahead of any curve.
All right, do me a favor. Explain mean reverting. I talk about it a lot, and I've never taken the time to explain it, but I think it's important for the average guy to talk about, because I talk about the VIX all the time and how the reason that even though we've seen some big down days, the VIX is really going nowhere and it just seems to be reverting around the means. Explain mean reversion to everybody, please.
It's one of the first things I remember learning in the option pit of Board of Trade, and that's where the guys would teach me, Mike, markets aren't always mean reverting, but volatility always is. And volatility is the measure of, you know, how volatile the market is. And by mean reverting means that the market will always go back to what's the normal place it usually trades. So let me give you a best example of mean reversion ever in volatility. That was, you look at the VIX. The VIX is the volatility stock market. Historically, it averages around 19 to 20%. So that means, on average, the stock market's up or down 19 to 20% on its first, you know, on the year. In 2006, when the Fed was easing for, and beginning 2007, the VIX got down to 10%, and it stayed there for about 6 months. That was the lowest ever. And then that, to me, was the indication that it's going to go back at some point to the mean, which was, you know, 20, but it always overshoots. And it did, and that's when we got the crisis. And that's a bit of the problem with the VIX right now. It's at, you know, 12 to 13. It's been hovering there for 3 years. It's very low. We know that's historically very low. And I think that's one thing all investors really get, that at some point the VIX is going to go back to the mean, which means go back to a more normal level, which is around 20. Historically, it's been 20. And to expect it to stay down here forever, we all know that's not going to happen. It's just a question of when. So that's what I mean. We all mean by mean reverting. Go back to what's been normal historically. That's part of the problem now, though, is this, what we're doing right now is, how do you measure normal when there's no textbook in the world that ever really assessed the potential of negative interest rates, which is really what the problem is. It's what's happening in most of Europe.
And you know, we've seen over the last couple of days, the, you know, as we've seen the manipulation in currencies by the different central banks. You know, first it was the United States, okay, when Bernanke tried to devalue the dollar, and of course it did go way down. Everybody was worried about the dollar. And then, of course, you know, finally, the ECB decided that, oh, well, we want a cheaper dollar now. And of course, China's participating in this as well. But now we've seen a pretty big rally in the euro currency. Does Draghi step in again here and try to push it back down?
Well, that's a good, I think, a good point, a good question. I think he has, and the key point from Draghi is this statement he made when they started quantitative easing, and he made it open-ended. Until, he didn't say unless, he said, until we will print money or do quantitative easing, or whatever term they actually use, until inflation increases. So that seems to be kind of on autopilot for now. The difference, the key factor is, I think, for the U.S. dollar, is Europe has kind of swung too far to one extreme, as the U.S. did to, you know, the Europe went too far to the extreme, maybe they were going to go complete depression, and that's been saved. And the U.S. went too far, but thought, oh, we're going to, you know, the U.S. is going to blast off. And it's mean reverting, meaning, okay, the U.S., European Union is really not collapsing. Who knows what's going on in Greece? But the U.S. is the key factor here. Growth and strength and expected strength in the U.S. economy is nowhere near what a lot of people expected 6 months ago. And that's where you show up. It shows up in virtually all these. They have these economic surprise indices. Bloomberg has one. Citigroup has one, where they just measure the economic numbers. And virtually both of those, the main ones, are at multi-year lows. It means all the data has been weaker than expected. So to me, that's the key thing. It's really not so much euro strength, it's dollar weakness. And that's been one of the biggest stories this year. You look at the U.S. dollar index, it's down about 4% this month. But, you know, it's up in the last 6 months, or 9%, last 12 months, 19%. It's mean reverting. It just went too far. It's giving back something. And I guess that's something you try to figure out in a pitch right away. We always try to, you know, remember this question we'd ask, customers ask, hey, is a pitch short? Meaning they'd say, all the traders, are they long or are they short? And if the traders were short, meaning that they had taken on too many short positions, you knew the market was more likely to go up because positions were just too far extreme to one way. And I think that's what's happening. The dollar's coming back a little bit. I don't know how much further, but the key indicator is going to be U.S. economic growth. And still, there's still a lot of this tightening priced into the U.S. forward curve, meaning people are expecting it in the future, which to me is still, that's the dream. Oh, I'd love to have tightening only if it's because economy's blasting off and there's inflation. And to me, that's still a bit delusional. I wonder if it'd be wonderful if we get that. And I think that's what's coming back. The market's getting that back, which means the more that comes back, the more we should see dollar weakness, euro strength.
See, you're so eloquent in your words, and you say it so nicely. I just say the Fed sucks. They have no idea what's going on, and it's becoming ridiculous. And you know, of course, if the guys in the Fed could actually trade and understood how markets really worked, they wouldn't have created this whole disastrous mess in the first place. Because all they've done is they switched this from a free market capitalistic society into a socialist manipulated society. However, this is time for a break. This is the Bubba Show. I'm with my man Mike McClung. own, ETFSecurities.com. Check them out. Some of the best products in the world. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horace will be right back after the break. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horace rolling along with my man Mike McClone. And, of course, we know that he speaks eloquently and very professionally. And, of course, Bubba doesn't. He just says it like it is. And I said as we went to break that the Fed has no idea, and certainly they certainly shouldn't be trading because they have no idea of how trading actually works. And, Mike, you as an ex-trader, and I know that you were chomping at the bit to get to me because you wanted to answer that. Take it away, buddy.
Well, I think you made a key statement that is actually sometimes a detriment, but it's oftentimes an opportunity for the rest of us who, you know, we might not be as academically PhD oriented, but, you know, we're more trader oriented. And this is what you see in the pits right away. There's a lot of really smart guys in there, and they're not in some pits anymore, but there's a lot of really smart investment managers out there and professionals and hedge fund managers, and they get it. They understand that you can't just look at back at data and, you know, try to predict the markets. Now, if the smartest hedge funds in the world have a hard time predicting markets, how are the academics at the Fed going to do? And that's one thing that some people like Jim Rickards, a famous author, says the Fed is the worst indicator of the worst predictors of economic growth. So they're academics. They're thinking what academics should do. And as traders, we have to think of what's the appropriate cost-benefit analysis. And this is where we see right now what's happening in this key headline. Fed's still open the second half rate rise despite slowing economy. That's a substantial statement from the Fed that they're going to be there to tighten. I think it's because they do not like being, they're just fully expecting this recovery. And then I look back and I check all this data, and one key thing I pointed out earlier is you just look at the number of people with food stamps in this country. It's double, 50 million than the last time they tightened. You look at retail sales came out for March. It was supposed to be a big pickup. It clicked up 0.9%. But if you look at the last 12 months of retail sales, it's up 1.3%. Now, just look at that in context. That's a 12-month sum, right? It peaked at 8%. The last time the Fed started the tightening cycle in 2004, the 12-month sum of retail sales was running around 6 to 8%. It's 1.3% now. So they're expecting that to increase, and gosh, I so hope they're right. But rational, most people out here expect that's probably not going to happen. It'd be great if it does. And if it has, it should happen. It should have probably showed signs of it already. And that's where it comes into, let's think of, where's the opportunity here? And I think the opportunity is more likely that all this tightening that's priced into the forward curve comes out, which is probably going to be an opportunity for things like gold. It probably means dollar weakness. And hopefully it's okay for the stock market as they take the tightening out, but we don't know how that's going to work. I'm still very worried. We all are. You know, it's gone so far, so fast. But, and that's where, to me, the smaller probability is, the biggest risk is if they do tighten and we don't get this strength, then what? Then we might see protests in the street and major misfire risks in the markets. So who knows what they're going to do, but to me it's more likely we just continue to take out this tightening, and this consensus that they're going to tighten turns out to be just a big dream.
Whatever they do, I'm sure it's going to be wrong because, again, I think they have no clue. But let me ask you this, Mike. So, you know, we saw GDP in obviously a miss, but, you know, we have become – At least our pundits and our people that report these numbers have already come in. The report comes in with the built-in excuse. It's weather. It's this. I don't remember. Now, I've been doing this for 35 years. I know you've been doing it for quite a while as well. And you're very deeply involved in the business. What is your take of every announcement that comes out? If it's going to be bad news, they have a built-in excuse to go with it. What's your take on it?
Yeah, and that's what concerns me is generally when you have a very clear example in history and people follow it like verbatim, it usually doesn't happen that way. So everybody's using this example last year. Oh, it's just last winter was horrible. Now the winter before was horrible. The data, everything improved. The data was bad during that period. Then it improved. That's why I look at, okay, well, March retail sales should have been a lot better. They weren't. And then I look back then, you know, everybody's saying, okay, well, we should be getting this boost in consumer spending from, you know, from the energy collapse. We should. But that to me is the scariest thing when you have something like that and you're supposed to get an improvement in consumer spending and you don't. That to me is the biggest risk. And I'll give you an example. It's when you have a consensus and people are wrong, that's usually most important. So for instance, us guys, I used to have a book of accounts. You make a prediction in the market and you get people to take positions and try to make money. And then it was great when you're right, but once you're wrong, you'd have to reassess what you're wrong about and why. And that was the biggest thing that scares me about 2014. At the beginning of 2014, the consensus was yields are going to go up, bond prices were going to go down, and the commodity market was going to go up. They were completely wrong, that consensus. Not only were they wrong, we've had the biggest collapse in energy prices in almost in you know modern times, and a massive collapse in bond yields. So they're completely wrong. To me, what does that mean when you're that wrong for the future? And we're in the future now. And that's what scares me, that the Fed continues to expect us to pick up in economic growth. It's not happening. And I think that's still a dream.
Okay. Now, I know we've got the, you know, you've had a couple of new products and you've got some really solid products, which I love your, excuse me, I love your products and think that they're great. How's the, now that we're into the first earnings season with the new Zacks earnings ETF, how's that performing and what's your take?
Oh, it's been doing. Zacks have been doing very well. It's the earnings. I don't remember exact numbers, but what our Zacks index does, following the astute methodology from Zacks Investment Research, based in Chicago, it follows their methodology, and their goal is to pick up stocks that have the best potential future earnings. And the best way to do that is you don't look at how the earnings in the past. You look at the earnings estimates from all the people who make those estimates in the world, and that trend in estimates. So it's the earnings estimate revisions. So they pick stocks based on that trend in earnings estimate revisions, and obviously only pick stocks with trends where they're going higher. And generally, it outperforms the market. Historically, it's done a really good job outperforming. Last quarter, the VAX in Q1 was up around 6%. The overall market and benchmark Russell was up less than that. I think it was around closer to 4%. So overall, so far, so good. But that's been the key thing in the market. Overall, total earnings in markets have been declining. Although this quarter, generally, they're above estimates, people, but the estimates have dropped so low, and that's just the cotton markets and stocks are just in the equity markets are just not making as much money, but they're doing a lot of buybacks, which is helping support the market.
So, I mean, we keep, even the earnings, they keep telling me that they're good and everything's great and everything's good in the economy. I don't see it, babe. I can't. I'd like to see it good. Look, why would I want it not to be good? I want it to be the economy great. I love America, but to me, it sucks. And there's not good things going on right now. And it doesn't really appear to be getting any better. What do you think?
Some things are. We all know that there's few things getting better. But overall, I think that's a general assessment. And the key thing I like to really watch is you look at household income in this country. Depends on how you measure it. It's between $52,000 and $54,000. That's flat or been declining for 10 to 12 years since the peak. It's just not going up. And it does not. That's household income. That does not really factor in the fact that now, in the past, when I was a kid, we had, my dad worked, my mother took care of us. Now, most of us have two double incomes. Kids are working. Everybody's working. We have one household, two or three people working, yet it's the same income. And that's, to me, is part of this transmogrification of our society. The economy is growing slower. People are getting older. And technology is advancing so fast, you're getting replaced by computers. That is a significant change. And I think that's, you just look at the facts, that household income in this country has not been really increasing. Stuck at 52,000, and you can't really say we're doing better when that's stagnant and stuck. And that's actually a big shift since almost the beginning of this country. That's got to really start picking up before we should really see the Fed concerned about tightening.
And you look, and of course next week we've got the jobs number coming out again, and again they'll get up if it's anything worthwhile in numbers. They'll get up and brag how great it is, but you and I both know that the jobs that are being created are not very good either. So at the end, we've got about a minute left, so I just want to give you a heads up. But give us your take of the next couple of months in trading in markets. What do you think?
Well, this next jobs report will be a big factor. If it comes out a little bit weaker than expected, then I think it'll tip the scales for virtually most people in the market who are all expecting this to be just a soft patch, transitory, as the Fed says. That jobs report is going to be a big kicker. If it's weaker and if the data is weaker, then all this Fed tightening that's really been priced in should be coming out. We should have a completely different market. And the key thing will be how the stock market reacts. Now, gosh, we all hope it'll do well. I think most people are a bit cautious about it. I think it's a little bit Hi, that's where our products come into play. We think they're more, you know, better for the, you know, a bit better for the longer term, you know, buy and hold type. But that's going to be the key. This next unemployment number and how the stock market reacts. If it starts going down, that changes everything. If the U.S. equity market starts going down, the whole world changes because this growth engine, which is only really one left, U.S., will not be growing anymore. So hopefully it'll be better. Hopefully it'll be okay. But I think as astute investors, we have to protect ourselves for that potential risk that it doesn't, you know, that the slowdown is really less transitory than the Fed thinks.
And protect yourself by looking at ETFsecurities.com and check out their ETFs because, honestly, they are growing fast and they are the best. Make sure you go to ETFsecurities.com, check out Mike McClone's stuff, and he will be back with us next week. As always, this has been The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. Make sure you check out TheBubbaShow.org. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. Everybody have a great day. Thank you so much. See you tomorrow, everybody.
Your everlasting summer, you can see it fading fast. So you grab a piece of...
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.